injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers, our friends at Madison Computer Works, and SNR Remodeling. John Nichols from the Capital Times with us, the anniversary Capital Times. They are 100 years old today. Congratulations, John Nichols, on your fine publication reaching that milestone.
It's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
100 years ago, Cap Times was founded to oppose unnecessary wars, to support economic and social justice, racial justice, to take on corporations. Who'd have thought a paper that had that as its agenda would make it 100 years?
In a very tough,
pretty strong.
In a very tough business.
Yeah. So we are celebrating. We had today as we talk. It's the 13th, and this is the actual 100th anniversary. Last night we had an event at Monona Terrace in Madison that was packed, standing room only, and we launched our new book, The History of the Cap Times. And I will tell you, I'm going to bet that there's no other history of a newspaper in America that has a title like this one. Our subtitle is A Proudly Radical Newspaper's Century-Long Struggle for Justice and for Peace.
Outstanding. And I thank the Capital Times and yourself for your support over the years. And not every article in the Capital Times has been complimentary of me, and sometimes I got a little nudge, probably when I deserved it, but I really couldn't be more thankful for the support throughout my career.
I'm proud of the Capital Times. When you got batted around a little bit by the media industries of our time, I am proud that the Capital Times said that you needed to.
Well, I certainly
did. Surrounding areas.
All right, let's play my favorite clip of the night, Doug Jones, as he won this historic victory in Alabama last night in the special election for the Senate seat that was vacated by Jeff Sessions.
Now, let me just say, I know I've forgotten so much. I've forgotten so much to so many thank yous and how we feel. This vote, I've said it before, Alabama has been at a crossroads. We have been at crossroads in the past, and unfortunately, we have usually taken the wrong fork. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, you took the right road.
All right, and here's one more.
I want to thank each of you for helping me fulfill a lifelong dream of serving in the United States Senate that started out with my mentor, Powell Heflin, and ever since then, that has been my dream. Thank you for that. As we approach this history, as we approach this crossroads, we have work to do. We have work to do in this state to build those bridges within this state, to reach across with those that didn't vote for us to try to find that common ground. I'm pledging to do that tonight, but I will tell you, tonight is a night for rejoicing, because as Dr. King said, as Dr. King liked to quote, the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice. gentlemen, tonight in this time, in this place, you helped bend that moral arc a little closer to that justice, and you did it. That moral arc, not only was it bent more, not only was its aim truer, but you sent it right through the heart of the great state of Alabama in doing so. Thank you all.
I have to say, that's a moment that I haven't enjoyed like that for a very long time.
Couldn't agree more. Just listening to it again, it's beautiful. To quote King's most powerful and encouraging quote, and also to do so with that incredibly enthusiastic crowd. It was interesting when they declared that Doug Jones had won, when the word came down. The crowd at his headquarters, I think they were shocked. I mean, it was sort of like, I'm not sure they all believed it could happen. They knew it was a possibility. They fought for it, obviously worked for it incredibly. But when the word actually came, you heard and saw something that is very rare in politics, almost unheard of, where people suddenly realize not just that they have won an election, but that they have won a transformational election. And that kind of like there was a joyous roar that went up from that victory party, and it was just beautiful. I mean, it's just there's no other way to say it. Watching last night, watching the pattern of the votes come in, watching that declaration of victory, and then the response to it, and then Doug Jones' speech. I mean, frankly, I think that's why I cover politics.
You know, I think it's important to remember that when Republicans put up horribly flawed candidates, rather than getting in the mud and running people that are equally as flawed, when we find characters, good characters like Doug Jones and John Bel Edwards of Louisiana, mm-hmm. we can win in the South.
Oh, yeah. I mean, now, you know, take a look at this. Here's an interesting little fact for you. We now have statewide elected officials in Louisiana with John Bel Edwards, in Alabama, and in Mississippi, where there's an attorney general still hanging on. We're actually at an interesting point here, Sly, where the politics of the South is, if you start to look across these states, you start to recognize that the Democrats are very viable candidates for governor in states like Georgia and some other places around the South going into next year. We have to recognize that the 50-state strategy of Howard Dean a little over a decade ago, which Rahm Emanuel and others fought against, and which frankly was abandoned over much of the last decade to the incredible detriment of the Democratic Party, the 50-state strategy was always right.
Well, you know, that's interesting you say that, because former state senator Nina Turner was on a program over the weekend, and that's exactly what she said.
I think that the Democrats can actually pull this off. Over the weekend, several prominent African-American politicians, Democrats, Kamala Harris from California, Cory Booker from New Jersey, Deval Patrick, formerly the governor of Massachusetts, hit the trail for Jones. Can that make a difference?
I mean, we're giving it a try, and all politicians bring in the big folks, so to speak. But this really comes down to how you cultivate a relationship with voters over the long haul. Democrats tend to shy away from red states purely for political reasons, and hopefully we're learning now that we definitely need a 50-state strategy, and that strategy has to be year after year after year, and not just when we get in a situation like this. And then further, for Democrats to always have to balance whether they win or lose on the backs of African Americans is particularly troubling to me. It is crack the glass or break the glass in case of emergency. Now, we do have a real emergency now, but I think the party can go a long way, especially the national party, and cultivate in building the state parties every single year, so that when we have situations like this, you've already built a strong relationship with the voters that you're asking to come out to vote, and not have to try to rally or push people out last minute.
Those are wonderful points.
And Nina Turner, who, you know, is a friend of mine and somebody I've been on speaking tours with her and done a lot with her over the
years. Speak up a little bit, John.
Nina Turner's a friend of mine, and I've been on speaking tours and done a lot with her over the years. And you know, one of the striking things to me is that what she knows is rooted in political experience. She has run for office. She's been around politics for a long time. And she heads Our Revolution, which is Bernie Sanders's, or the, I should say, the group that grew out of Bernie Sanders' campaign. And I just did a cover story. It's the current issue of The Nation, where I went down and spent a week in Texas with Jim Hightower and Nina Turner and others, following them around, looking at what they were doing. And I cannot begin to emphasize that, you know, this Alabama race, this is top-line stuff. It's going to make the headlines. Everybody's going to pay attention. Obviously, Virginia, the same. But I want to emphasize, there's stuff happening out there.
Oklahoma.
Oh, that is a beautiful story, what's going on in Oklahoma. But it's Texas as well. We don't have time for me to list all of the races this year in rural and small town Texas and in, you know, historically Republican regions and towns where the winner was not just a Democrat or a progressive, but was somebody who was really stirring it up. Black Lives Matter activists, union activists, civil rights and civil liberties activists coming into politics and winning elections in the South. And so I think that the lesson that people need to take away from this is twofold. Number one, yes, you do all that work. You go back in, you do the grassroots organizing. But that thing Nina Turner said about building a relationship, like winning people's trust, you do not win people's trust by saying, I'm a little bit better than the Republicans.
Well, it's interesting you say that. And, of course, we saw some of this happen in 2006. And remember, we won Democrats won the northern part of Mississippi, won a district there. There were a number of really good sort of economic populists that may not have been lefty up and down the line, but they were economic populists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It seems like you build all those sort of races. They happen. You have good years. You win a bunch of legislative seats. And then to capture the presidency, Democrats cater to Wall Street because they feel they have to raise $100 billion. And then they don't follow through on the economic stuff that they should be doing, and it all gets washed away.
Well, and they push candidates away. You know, I'll give you a very good example. In 2010, in Wisconsin, the lieutenant governor of Wisconsin was a woman who had a two-term track record, who had an incredible background, who had incredible speaking skills, who was, you know, very close to activists and communities across the state, had a base, was ready to go, and Barbara Lawton was pushed aside by the Democratic establishment because they thought they had a better strategy.
Well, if you remember, I wrote a op-ed piece. It wasn't an op-ed piece, but it was an opinion piece that ran in the Capital Times,
mm-hmm.
telling people to get on board that train.
Well, I look back on that, and I think to myself, is it just possible that a woman with statewide name recognition, great political skills, great issues, might have been able to ignite something and get some energy going in a way that might have stopped Scott Walker?
Here is a clip from, this is actually one of the funniest things I've ever heard in a very tragic way. This is Kayla Moore the night before the election.
Fake news would tell you that we don't care for Jews. I tell you all this because I've seen it all, so I just want to set the record straight while they're here. One of our attorneys is a Jew.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's a good thing that she was setting the record straight while they were all there, because they won't be covering Roy and Kayla
Howard decided to really go down in a classy
yeah,
way last night.
A lot of dignity.
Here is Roy Moore.
We realize when the vote is this close that it's not over. And we still got to go by the rules about this recount provision. Part of the problem with this campaign is we've been painted in an unfavorable and unfaithful light. We've been put in a hole, if you will, and it reminds me of a passage in Psalm 40. I waited patiently for the Lord. That's what we've got to do, is wait on God and let this process play out.
He's still waiting. He's waiting.
It was such an awful way to go out, right? You know, because I think, this I may be wrong on this, but I think they were actually misreading the numbers, the actual numbers. Because, you know, at that point, Doug Jones was ahead by 1.5 points, not
by 21,000 votes.
Right. He was doing not a landslide or anything like that, but he was ahead by way outside the recount margin. And I think that more people had looked at the numbers like a few minutes earlier and thought it was a little closer than it was. So they roll out this whole scenario where, well, you're going to have to go hear from the Secretary of State about the recount provision. They're talking about recounts and recounts and recounts. And yet, right underneath them, as they're saying that, the margin's getting wider, right? It's getting way outside the automatic recount.
Well, the prayer circles that were going on throughout the evening at the Roy Moore headquarters.
You know, there's trouble. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Stand by.
But the other thing, too, is, with all due respect, quoting Psalms, and suggesting that that there's some sort of biblical support for Roy Moore, or frankly for Doug Jones. I mean, that was exactly what was wrong with Roy Moore's campaign. And the fact of the matter is, he tried to tell people, maybe even some reasonable people of faith, try to tell him that they had to back him to, see off some apocalypse, see off something horrible. And the fact of the matter is, he was the candidate who scared people. And he scared enough people that the state of Alabama, which has not elected a Democrat to the U.S. Senate for a very long time, hasn't voted for a Democrat for president since Jimmy Carter, state of Alabama decided to make a break. And the fact is that if you're looking for
Are you telling me that Roy Moore was a horseman of the Trump apocalypse?
He's a horse of some.
You know, I think his horse Sassy.
Yeah.
Sassy the horse, I don't think she likes him very much. Did you?
Those videos were bad.
Yeah. He doesn't seem to know how to ride. I've never ridden a horse, so I'm not gonna critique his horse riding, but it didn't look quite right. We got to take a break. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. It's sliceoffice.com.
Hi there. My name is Ishmael Ozan, and many of you know me as the Dane County District Attorney, but I am also a husband and a father of two young girls. Today, I am asking you to make the choice my wife and I made to not use physical punishment with our children. Many of us are not aware that over 16 years ago, the American Academy of Pediatrics urged doctors to recommend that parents not use physical punishment on their children. Today, over 100 years of research on children and families supports this recommendation. Look, well-meaning parents may use physical discipline intending to teach their children to make good choices, but we now know that physical discipline actually leads to more disobedience and aggressive behaviors in children. We all want what is best for our kids. Today, we now know what is best for kids is parenting based on respect, mutual understanding, and logic, rather than fear of physical pain. Please join me in learning more about positive parenting and creating a violence-free home.
Paid for by the Dane County District Attorney's Office with support from UW Health American Family Children's Hospital.
Jeff's Guitar Clinic is a multifaceted shop offering guitars, amplifiers, and all accessories, guitar lessons for all ages, and instrument repair of the highest quality. Take the scenic drive to beautiful Fort Atkinson and see what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call call Jeff's Guitar Clinic today at 920-723-1733. That's Jeff's Guitar Clinic at 920-723-1733. Jeffsguitar.com.
Welcome back to Sly's Office.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Of course, we're talking about the incredible events of Alabama yesterday and what they may foretell for the future. Let me just play one more clip of Doug Jones here.
At the end of the day, this entire race has been about dignity and respect. This campaign has been about the rule of law. This campaign has been about common courtesy and decency and making sure everyone in this state, regardless of which zip code you live in, is going to get a fair shake in life.
That message did resonate.
Well, it did, and you know, I think it's important. Not everybody will hear it the same way, but those of us who come from small towns, from rural areas, when you say every zip code, that's a really good message. That's talking to, it's not like every zip code in you know, some big city. It's you know, he's saying, you know, look, he's going to reach out to this whole state. Now, he is going to be the most targeted Democratic senator of the bunch, except maybe, you know, Heitkamp up in North Dakota as you move forward here. But what he's done is quite remarkable, and he's won narrowly, but everything that I know about this guy suggests that he's going to actually work very, very hard to make a connection with the whole of Alabama, and I do not rule out the possibility that Doug Jones will have an extended Senate career, certainly much longer than Luther's.
I love that he paid homage to Howell Heflin last night.
And did you notice, you hear some of the cheers there?
Yeah.
I also love that he said Happy Hanukkah.
It was great. Well, there is a very prominent Jewish community in Alabama.
Oh, and most southern states have.
Right.
And I think here's, again, what's important to understand is Doug Jones is a 21st century Democratic candidate. He's not some throwback. And the politics he brought to this race were actually quite forward-looking on a whole host of levels. And the Democratic Party has much to study.
Well, I guess Joe Trippi gets a little credit for this, too, doesn't he?
A lot. I think, you know, and the interesting thing about Joe Trippi is, much as with Howard
Dean... We should say he was Jones' political consultant.
Right, and basically managed a lot of the thing. And this is the interesting thing. As with Howard Dean back in 2003, Joe Trippi recognized a possibility. He looked at Alabama and he said, you know, this special election, something could happen here. So long before all the pieces fell in place, you know, everything came together, Trippi recognized the possibility, and he recognized that you needed to have a candidate like Doug Jones. Just imagine if everybody had read the obituaries, the political obituaries, right, and said there's no way the Democrat can win in Alabama. It's not even worth an effort. And if they just basically kind of let it go, right, and had a too-weak a candidate, it wouldn't have worked. This is important to understand. Roy Moore got beat, but also Doug Jones got elected because Doug Jones actually had something to offer.
And you know, throughout this race, Chris Matthews has been trashing Doug Jones for giving the answers that he did on abortion. Mm-hmm. And last night, I can't remember who came on, but it was a Democratic senator, and Chris Matthews said, "Are you gonna let Doug Jones be a moderate?" John, what the hell does that mean?
Well, that's wrong. You see, that's the misread of this thing. Doug Jones ran as a champion of civil rights who took on the Klan and fought to, you know, finally settle decades old cases, especially as regards the Birmingham church bombing. But he also somebody who stepped up and, you know, went after those who are attacking clinics, and he's a defender of abortion rights. He spoke favorably of the LGBTQ community. He talked about wages and unions. I mean, where is this guy? I mean, I'm not...
Yeah, the United Steelworkers has a presence in that state.
A big presence.
Right, right.
And in fact, I remember Alabama's got, now because of what Walker's done to Wisconsin, Alabama has comparable level of unionization.
Here is the subtext of what was going on yesterday with Donald Trump.
Facing renewed accusations of sexual misconduct, President Trump lashing out at Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand today, the first female senator to call on him to resign, tweeting, "Lightweight Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, a total flunky for Chuck Schumer, and someone who would come to my office begging for campaign contributions not so long ago and would do anything for them." Gillibrand firing back,
"It was a sexist smear attempting to silence my voice, and I will not be silenced on this issue. Neither will the women who stood up to the president."
Senator Elizabeth Warren accusing Mr. Trump of slut-shaming her colleague. The White House defiant.
"If your mind is in the gutter, would you have read it that way? He's obviously talking about political partisan games that people often play."
There is increasing speculation Senator Gillibrand is eyeing her own bid for the White House.
Everybody else's mind is in the gutter except the White House. If you can just speak up a little, please.
When Sarah Sanders said that, I was right at that exact moment, I decided that her sell-by date had come. I was done with her because that was such a indefensibly wrong statement to make. To say, "Oh yeah, only if your mind is in the gutter would you read one of Donald Trump's gutter attacks as anything other than it was." And I'm sick of Sarah Sanders. She was amusing for a while and annoying for a while, but at a point where Nikki Haley, the UN ambassador, is standing up and, earning some honor points for saying that Donald Trump ought to be held to account, or at least those who criticize the guy ought to be heard. At a point where that is happening, for Sarah Sanders to get up there and play that game is shameful. I mean, at a level that, and it's not like saying Sarah Sanders is shameful is something new, but she hit a new level.
Well, I think that John Kelly still holds the record for shameful. Lying about Representative Wilson. That one was beyond the pale, but this one comes pretty close. All right, here's what Steve Schmidt said this morning on Morning Joe.
"And we know for certain today, this morning, that Bannonism and Trumpism, that's going to wind up on the ash heap of history also. A coalition of the decent, of Democrats and independents and Republicans, of young people, of African Americans, have rebuked this. One of the greatest acts of optimism in the history of this country was Abraham Lincoln's insistence that the Capitol Dome, its construction, be completed in the middle of Civil War. And this credibly accused child molester will never, ever walk under that dome as a United States senator. And that's a good thing. And it's a good morning in this country. And building off the shores of this country is a great wave. And it's going to hit in November 2018, and it will wipe this away. And for Paul Ryan, for Mitch McConnell, and all these leaders who have desecrated the conservative movement, desecrated the Republican Party, at midnight, when that ball comes down in Times Square, set the clock, because the hour of reckoning is coming."
Well, Al, that was pretty direct.
I could listen to that for quite a while longer. That is perfect. And I love that. I really, really love that he brought in McConnell and Ryan. Because it is important to understand that McConnell and Ryan had the chance to follow Jeff Flake's lead. Jeff Flake sent a check to Doug Jones and signaled that he believed Doug Jones should win that race. McConnell and Ryan sat by the sidelines. They said, "Oh, we don't like Roy Moore so much, and you know, McConnell even said, oh, I wish he'd step aside, right? But the fact of the matter is, when Donald Trump got on board for Roy Moore, McConnell and Ryan essentially went silent, right? They were willing accomplices to what Donald Trump was doing. And if Roy Moore had been elected, McConnell would have ultimately seated him and worked with him. And so that's the bottom line reality. And so I really
Between Donald Trump going to Pensacola and Donald Trump going to Mississippi, I really do believe that Donald Trump meant to pump up the turnout among white rural citizens of Alabama. And I think he had the opposite effect.
I think you're exactly right. I think he did two things that are significant there. Number one, the more Trump got involved and tried to suggest, well, this is a really important race to advance the Trump agenda, I think the more he reminded African-American voters, young voters, everybody made up that Doug Jones coalition, that they better get out, right? I think Trump was a great mobilizer for people supporting Doug Jones. But he also did something else. That rally in Pensacola was ugly. It was a mean rally. And I suspect that did a little bit to depress the suburban Republican vote that ultimately, you know, it ultimately went for Roy Moore.
Yeah, but only 50 Shelby County, 56-42, yeah.
Yeah, it didn't go big.
Usually it's, and, you know, usually it's 70% Republican county.
That's what I'm saying. And so I think that Trump, I think it's important to mention Bannon here. This was Bannon's play from
Something about him rumps me the wrong way.
Really? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's the reading, you know, like his reading list of, you know, European fascists. but the fact of the matter is that this was Bannon's play from the start. In fact, it was Bannon's project after he left the White House. Right? It was, you know, helping Roy Moore. It helped Roy Moore get the nomination, or at least, you know, advance himself toward it. Helping Roy Moore once he got the nomination, and then aggressively going in to defend Roy Moore after the very credible revelations regarding Moore chasing after and molesting young women. And so, I mean, Bannon went all in on this thing. And the interesting thing about it was he convinced Trump to go with him. And Trump resisted initially, but at the end of the day, Trump went with him. And so this is a Trump-Bannon project. And you know what? If you're a Democratic strategist, what you should probably say is keep that coalition together.
Well, and you know, let's face it.
Destroy the Republican Party.
Mitch McConnell has a hand in this as well, spending millions of dollars propping up Luther Strange and attacking Mo Brooks.
Yeah, Mo Brooks, you know, but this is the incredible thing. We don't want to go too deep into the weeds here. But they actually had somebody who could have won that election with ease in Mo Brooks. And by the way, Mo Brooks is a very, very conservative Republican.
But he's a pretty smart one. He's not stupid.
Really smart. Yeah. Do you remember when the shooting occurred at the baseball game?
Yes.
And Steve Scalise was right. hit a really horrible day. And if you recall Mo Brooks, he was like the guy on TV for a very long period talking about stuff. He was calm. He was professional. He was caring and concerned. In you know what I mean? He came off very, very well. And I remember watching it at that time and thinking, you know, this guy, you know, this is the kind of guy who could win a Senate race, blink of the eye.
Well, I would imagine Mo Brooks is getting some calls today.
Oh, well, you know what? He maybe. But here's the truth is that Alabama politics has been shaken up in a whole bunch of ways. Richard Shelby's getting pretty old. He may be stepping down at some point. Their governor there is a transitional figure. We'll see whether she stays on. I just think the whole politics of that state's, you know, it's suddenly going to be an interesting state to cover.
That is for sure. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com. Brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
Happy Doug Jones Day.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, five more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.